Well, one of the things that I think helps, and it was not only here but previously in my career, is to reminding people just exactly what your mission is. And our mission is to serve the local church.
Well, I want to welcome you to the second episode of Mindful Leader. This is a podcast that I have been thinking about for quite a while and finally got to a place where I decided to sort of put it together. And my own personal training wheels for this is that I'm going to take a look at how to be a mindful leader, particularly within the area of the Mountain Sky Conference of the United Methodist Church, and primarily within the area of financial management. But over time, as it grow, I will grow out from there. There will be sometimes in the comment in the show, I'll mention the show notes. Depending upon how you see the podcast, it might be there's a place for an I for information. But there is both the podcast itself and there's words about the podcast on most podcast broadcasting vehicles. So when I'm talking about that place, a mindful leader is somebody who I hope is authentic, empathetic, and is working on self-awareness. And I think all of that's relevant to our discussion of how we might lead in this decade of the 21st century. Our guest today is Bruce Berger. Bruce has been the president of the Council on Finance and Administration. We may occasionally say CFNA as a bit of a shorthand, but it is a conference council that is responsible for, ta-da, finance and administration. Bruce is a graduate of University of Nebraska. I was always amused when I lived in Colorado that the number three football broadcasting network up and down I-25 was the Big Red. They were it was important. You could go to the wrong sports bar on a Saturday afternoon in Colorado Springs, and everybody in there was wearing red. So it was impressive. But Bruce was went there on a partial scholarship for golf and a partial academic scholarship. And he studied and majored in economics. His experience was he got hired in 1968 to work at a small startup that had just a few stores, less than 20. And 7 years later, they had over 100 stores, and their name was Target, or sometimes called Target. So it was that's where he got his private sector chops. Went to the state of Colorado to work for them for a while, and was going to use it as a bridge to something else, and he ended up staying. He liked it so much, and he worked in the area of finance and administration. So he came to us serve on Conference of Council of Finance Administration with lots of experience. He also has 10 years of experience working for Maximus Consulting, where they for 10 years, and they would send him out to various places, various 38 states that he supported. And he'd leave on a Monday or a Tuesday and come back on a Friday, and he would sort of try to help them with areas that he had some expertise in. Bruce continues to play golf. He also has a hobby of woodworking. I can relate to that. I do a little bit of woodworking myself. And I would say to you that about right in woodworking is not good enough. In the woodworking world, a 16th of an inch matters, maybe even a 32nd of an inch matters. Bruce has served God nobly, and he served the conference nobly as a member at Park Hill United Methodist in Denver. And sometimes he will regularly remind us of where the United comes from in the title United Methodist. Isn't that right, Bruce?
That's correct, Dennis. I think that that words and titles matter.
And you make that clear when we leave out the word United and United Methodist.
Anyway. Right.
Bruce has been on the council since 2013. He has been the president since 2020. He will wrap up those duties at Annual Conference 2024, and he probably will wipe his brow and say, thank you very much. I'm glad to turn this over to somebody else. Bruce, with that as an introduction, let me welcome you to Mindful Leader. And I would invite you to perhaps to start by telling us a little bit about the Council on Finance and Administration. And if we ever resort to geek speak and we call it CFNA or CAFA, forgive us, but that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the Conference Council on Finance and Administration. So tell me a little bit about the council.
Well, thank you, Dennis. The Council on Finance and Administration, by what we run our operation as a church, all of our churches together, the Book of Discipline, has the responsibility for just that, finance and administration for our 374, now a different number, but 370 plus churches in our four state plus one church in Idaho area. So we're a very diverse area, but we manage the funds, designated funds and general funds. We manage income, we manage expenses, we have responsibility for personnel and in other administrative areas. So whereas there are different ministerial areas, when there are different programmatic areas, we are the administrative arm, and we operate in collaboration with trustees. There's a trustees group that has responsibility for all the facilities, and then we have another council that's responsible for benefits and health insurance. So all of us together work to manage the as best we can the finances. We hire the treasurer, the CFO, and supervise that particular function, and the staff within the council of the conference office.
Well, thank you very much. That I'm sure it was helpful to a lot of people knowing that CFNA, Council on Finance Administration, is not responsible for everything with a dollar attached to it, but a part of it. The last podcast we did, the very first podcast I did, my guest was Angela. She is the Chief Financial Officer. And she spoke about some of the speed bumps that we've had over the last four approximately years. Part of it was the fallout from General Conference 2019. So even though that happened in the late winter, early spring of 2019, there was still implications of that we're still wrestling with. COVID itself, Boy Scout bankruptcy, we had to change the apportionment model. We have disaffiliations going on. And she talked a little bit about how she thinks we've weathered those speed bumps. One of the points she made, of course, was that we're not alone in that. It was everybody has had to experience that. How do you feel in your leadership on the council? How do you feel that you have tried to lead us in the weathering of these speed bumps?
Speed bumps is, to put it mildly, we had
Amen.
Massive speed bumps. When you talk about leadership, that implies to me when you're dealing about leadership and mindful leadership, that you're moving an organization to another place. The leaders lead. They don't just maintain the status quo. And so what we were given in all of those circumstances was a requirement to move, not an opportunity, but a requirement.
Was an option.
No, there was no option to it. The General Conference had an impact, big impact on our revenue. Pandemic had a big impact on our revenue. The apportionment model change and some issues that I wish we would have done differently had an impact on our revenue. So we had to deal with revenue stream issues. We had to deal with balancing expenses. And one of the things that's useful to keep in mind is that we are dealing with a volunteer organization. That is, everybody on the Council of Finance and Administration, with the exception of the treasurer, is a volunteer. They come to us, they may be clergy, but they're still a volunteer through the council. And so, like in all volunteer organizations, part of what you do in leadership is trying to encourage people, trying to be a cheerleader at sometimes, but also to push people forward and get them to buy into the change that you're looking at. One of the things that I think is useful is not to become enamored with your own infallibility. I think it's useful to use the collective minds of the organization, of the council, to develop how we move forward. Some of the things that we did that helped in all of these is that we took training to the churches. That's where the action happens, is at the churches. If we're going to do something that's going to impact revenue, it's going to start with what's going on at the churches. So one of the things that helped us is by encouraging many of our churches had not started using automatic revenue collection. They hadn't started taking their pledges and donations electronically and automatically.
Yeah.
And that was one of the biggest changes, is we went from having like 20% of our churches doing their pledges and so forth electronically to about 60 to 65% now. The balance are mostly small churches where it just isn't, but they still do it, even the smaller churches. So I think that's one of the real successes we had, was moving the churches into a new age of electronic giving, which they found also helped them from in church organizations. You have ups and downs in revenue.
Yeah.
You know, you have the Christmas money come in, you have the summer vacations when the contributions drop off the face of the earth. By going to electronically and automatically, it leveled it out. And that was a saving for a lot of churches. And so people didn't do their pay their contribution only when they are in church. They did it automatically. So if they went on vacation, if something else happened, it was paid automatically. That was a big, big help. Yeah. Another thing that we did, Dennis, is to help with the speed bumps, is we started doing through responsible stewardship is monthly
webinars,
yeah. Monthly training sessions where we would for an hour, one Tuesday a month, and so we put on training for the churches and all anybody in the church that wanted to come, and that would help them deal with difficult issues. You know, it's hard for any local church, smaller, to have the expertise to know how to deal with some of the more difficult tax issues, some of the more difficult administrative issues or audit issues. And so we were able to do training to help them get up to speed where they don't have the expertise themselves.
And if one of the listeners is not aware of those webinars that we have once a month, don't hesitate to drop a note to me in the email address in the show notes, and I will get you linked up with the people that can get you to the class there on that. I talked with Angela the last time a little bit about how we can subconsciously get into this inversion of expectations and roles and responsibilities. It's one thing to say that the conference is here to serve the local church, but often just by sheer nature of the way people think, we can get to a place, unfortunately, that the mindset is the fact that the local church is here to serve the conference. So my caveat is that I obviously don't agree with the local church serving the conference. And I think you just went through several examples about how we have tried to stay focused on the local church. Is there anything you want to add in there as maybe as relates to best practices that we've done over the last 3 or 4 years while you've been the president?
Well, one of the things that I think helps, and it was not only here, but previously in my career, is to reminding people just exactly what your mission is. And our mission is to serve the local church. Our mission is, as an example, Dennis, when I was at the Department of Human Services, I would every once in a while ask my staff, what do you do? And it might be the accounting staff, and they would start out by saying, when I first took the position, they said they were accountants. And I said, no, you're not. Your job is to help sick people get better. And the role that you play in that is to be an accountant.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for all of us in leadership roles at the conference to remind people that our job is to help the churches make disciples for the transformation of the world.
Amen.
And in doing so, what your role is. Okay, my role is to be on the Council of Finance Administration and move that ideologically forward, and don't skip the part where you need to find out what it is that they need, not what it is that you want to tell them.
Yeah. That's what can I help you really help you with? Not come in and tell them what they need. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That goes back to not giving your wife a circular saw for her anniversary, you know, that those kinds of things. Find out what they want, not what you want to give them.
So where is serving the church, local church, hard for us and our leadership from the council level, from the conference level?
Well, I have a long list, but I'll try to keep it short.
Okay, we've only got 30 minutes or so. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, one of the things, Dennis, is and you know this well, I see there's probably 100 different worldviews that we have on our council, but I see three major ones. I see one is we have clergy, and their worldview is that of a clergy person. We secondly have clergy such as yourself, Dennis, who had a career outside of the clergy before becoming clergy. So you had as much time in the army as you had as a clergy person.
Yep.
So that gives you a different view. And thirdly, we have laity who only know the private, quote, private sector. It may be government or whatever. And so I think all three of those groups view the world differently. And so when you're talking with any of the council and then therefore with the churches, I don't think that all of us who are non-clergy always understand how the pastors think in the church.
Yeah.
And therefore our communications are not always as good as they could be. And our ability to communicate to such a diverse geographic and frankly, politically diverse group of people, it is difficult at times. And again, I think a key phrase to always remember for the council is not to get too enamored with our own infallibility. You know, we make mistakes. We do things wrong. I think our transparency has to be to admit it and move forward. I was just going to say it, but not to dwell on it. I think if we dwell on mistakes, people have a tendency to lose confidence in us.
Yeah. Angela made an interesting illustration in her speaking last week, and she used the idea of subtitles in movies. And she was surprised she had to turn the subtitle on a movie on that was in English, but based upon the nature of the English it was being spoken, she had to turn the subtitle on in order to be able to follow it. And I would say to you, part of what you're saying is a different set of words to describe a common situation that you perhaps understand what the pastor might be saying or what the clergy might be saying as individual words, but there's things behind it that warrant a little bit more unpacking, a little more explanation, subtitles, if you will, that could help you understand better how they're thinking. The last podcast, we weren't ready to talk the 2024 budget, Mountain Sky Conference budget. And I think we're closer to that now. And we're always at annual conference a little constrained for time. And with the understanding, I'm going to make a little bit of a joke here, which is what might you say if you had all the time in the world? What might you say to the conference next month about the 2024 Mountain Sky budget? But you really don't have, of course, all the time in the world. But if you wanted to give a lengthier explanation that you might be allowed to, might have time for an annual conference, what would you say? What would you like to say?
What I would like to say is I'd like to spend more time focusing in on what our revenue expectations are in the budget, how we arrived at them, and how we can't magically pull revenue out of the hat, but this is something that we all have to participate in, and that the revenue, where does it go? We don't spend enough time, I don't think, talking about when we have a budget, one third of our budget disappears just automatically going to the general conference.
The general church.
Secondly, the general church. The general church. Yeah. Secondly, we have built in what I call non-discretionary expenses. And these are personnel and other kinds of things that we just are not very nimble at changing. So, and thirdly, that we have to make a concerted effort. We have to balance the budget. We can't just make revenue come out of the sky, nor can we just magically change what the expenses are. That we're changing, the bigger the organization, like the annual conference, the harder it is to change. And so I think there's a fear, that's one issue. The second issue is trying to somehow get people to understand the process that we had to come up with the budget and how they have a role in that and how they have a role in providing us feedback and information. We try very hard not to do things in isolation, but sometimes it happens that way, and it's unfortunate, but we need to get the input from everybody.
Yeah.
And
I think people would be a little surprised if they just to find out how collaborative our objective is with the development of the budget, which of course means it takes some time to do.
The other thing is I would like to get across to the people and is that the 24 budget and the 23 budget in reality are bridge budgets. We are still dealing with a lot of uncertainty relative to the annual conference and where we're headed. We have a transition with the new bishop coming in next year because our bishop is going to retire. We have the general conference is going to meet, and so the policy and procedures for the general church are going to change.
Yeah,
and that's going to have an impact on. There's a lot of things that are going to have major impacts on us, and I don't think we can crystal ball those today. What we have right now is we have a budget that is a transitional budget to get us to that change in a responsible way.
Yeah. All right. Well, and so consequently, if I were to put a number, or at least not, if not a precise number, but when we approve a budget at annual conference, are we approving line items that sum up to something, or are we approving one number that then we display what the line items are, but we have capacity to change that in 2024 if we need to? Which one is that?
Yeah, it's the second, Dennis. What we do is we approve a budget that's a number, $5,688,241. That's our revenue and expense number, or something in that range.
Okay.
And when we approve that, that means that it is the total that we're managing to. And by a book of discipline, the Council on Finance Administration has the ability to manage within that and give increases or decreases in specific line items and be somewhat nimble in moving around. What we're restrained by is the overall number.
Okay. All right. Well, that's real helpful. If you ever watched the TV series, The Actors Studio, went on about 10 years, the host there would regularly ask the guest of the day 10 questions. And he asked everyone the same 10 questions. I'm not going to ask 10, I'm going to ask one. And my question that I want to ask everybody until I change the question is, what do you know now you wish you had known when you took over your present position as the president of the Council on Finance Administration?
I suppose I wish I'd had known more relative to the tension that goes on between the Council of Finance Administration and the budget and the Bishop's Roundtable and the program staff. I thought we had, just based on a lack of the overview, I thought we had a better working relationship than what we had. And I think there was a level of distrust that happened for whatever reason that it has taken time to try to rebuild. And I think that we're still working on that. I just don't think we've gotten there yet.
Do you think those speed bumps of General Conference 2019 and COVID and Boy Scout bankruptcy and disaffiliation contributed to that? Or you just think it was just there was tension already there behind the scene, but you just didn't know it before you took over as president?
Dennis, I think there was a little behind the scenes that was always there, but I think the speed bumps exacerbated it greatly. And the fact of the matter is, when you're dealing with those kinds of issues, you have a need to move more quickly than a collaborative process always works.
Yeah.
So if you have a collaborative process, then you have less distrust. If you don't have time for as collaborative a process as you would like, oftentimes that breeds distrust. Not because you did anything wrong, it's just because people didn't get their say. You know?
I've witnessed that, not necessarily in the Council on Finance Administration, but in other places, sometimes where you run into something where there's tension that needs to be sort of sometimes just somebody being allowed to articulate what their viewpoint is, even if you're not going to do what they want, what they want you to do. They want at least a respectful listen. What's one of the great quotes? Sometimes we listen in order to reply rather than to respectfully listen to what the person has to say. And right. I wonder how much of that is part of the issue.
You have people who don't necessarily want to get their way, but they want to get heard. They don't want to be invisible.
Yeah.
And none of us as a human being wants to be invisible. You know, Dennis, you might have noticed that I often, when we have a council meeting, if I've noticed that somebody hasn't said anything or much, I will go around and ask them specifically.
You do.
I try to draw everybody into the discussion.
Yeah, you do. And I think it's very helpful to make sure that people realize that their voice is important. Bruce, I want to thank you for taking your time out to talk to us a little bit about this. Back when There was a time where Howard Baker would, when he would, he was a senator from Tennessee, and he would sometimes turn around to people, and he would, at the end of a series of conversations with somebody speaking to the Senate, he would sometimes say, "Now, if there was something I didn't ask that I should have asked, what might it be? Is there anything here that I maybe should have asked? If you think there's not, then we can move on. But if you think there's anything that I should have asked, tell me what it is."
I suppose the one thing that you could have asked, and maybe I'm glad you didn't, is do I think I made a difference? Not do I think other people think I made a difference, but what do I feel in my soul? Well, did I make a difference?
And your answer to that might be?
My answer to that is, I think, still to be determined.
Oh, okay. The jury's out.
The jury is still out.
All right.
Until we get to the end of the path.
Well, Bruce, I again want to thank you for taking your time to do this today. I know this next 13 months as the president of the council is not going to be easy. I know one of the things you need to do is to start grooming your replacement, and that person has not been named yet. It's chosen by the council. But I know that that's going to be part of your endeavors for the next 13 months. For everybody mm-hmm. that's listening, I have several people already lined up for my next set of interviews. At some point in my process of doing this, I'll start to lay out the names of who these people are, so you can get a chance to perhaps get me a question you'd like to ask them. I'm not at that place in my creation process yet, but we're getting there soon. I also want to have a good mix of people that are staff members, like Angela Thomas is a member of the staff. She's a paid employee of the conference. But I also want to have people like Bruce, who are volunteers, both at the local church and volunteers to the conference. I think getting a good mix of those two will be helpful. And as I said earlier in the show, I will eventually get to a place where this will not be all mountain sky. It will not be all responsible stewardship. But I thought, given what's going on in 2023, this would be a good place to start. So thank you again for your time today. I hope that we said some things that would be helpful to you. And I look forward for us sharing other things for you in the future. Thank you very much. God bless you, and peace be with you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dennis.